welcome to Upfront on Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, the UN describes a refugee as someone who has been forced to flee his or her country. People often flee their countries for many reasons, including persecution, war, or violence. It is estimated that sub-Saharan Africa is home to over 3 million refugees, and many of them coming from countries such as Burundi, South Sudan, Somalia, and the Central African Republic. Violent conflict in these countries continues to force thousands of local citizens from their homes, many often having to travel thousands of miles seeking refuge in neighboring countries like Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, DRC, and others. Now, we should point out that while war and conflict are primary reasons why people flee their home countries, many others flee for other reasons, due to other reasons such as extreme weather and changing climate patterns. Those are some of the other reasons aside from violent conflict why people flee their countries. So, what happens when people seek refuge in another country? What is the obligation of the recipient country or host country? Well, the 1951 Refugee Convention says that once a refugee enters the territory of a state or country that is party to the convention, that they should be granted protection from any threat to their physical safety. The convention also says that refugees should receive at least the same rights, including freedom of thought, of movement, and freedom from torture and degrading treatment. Now, it goes without saying, of course, that they should also receive food and shelter. And of recent, there has been calls for host countries to pay special attention to the safety of women and girls. Unfortunately, reports continue to show that in some host countries, the presence of refugees compounds the already existing economic and socio-political difficulties in these countries. And because of that, we continue to hear about issues in the response mechanisms of these countries, including in many countries where we hear of refugees facing strict policies related to their ability to move around freely. There's also a limitation to their access to local markets for them to be able to sell their goods or engage in some form of commercial activities. So today on the show, we will look at some of these issues related to refugee resettlement in some of these countries of special interest. We will look at some countries that are doing a great job in hosting and resettling refugees. We will also talk to two researchers from Refugees International, whose new report acknowledges that whereas there is no emergency response that is perfect, the Ugandan government and aid agencies receiving refugees from South Sudan deserve great credit for receiving them in what they say is a dignified and protective manner. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's start off the show with a report from Mugume Davis, Upfront's correspondent in that region.
Teacher Drusil Funyisa takes students of primary 5 class through an English lesson at Nyumazu Primary School in Nyumazu Refugee Settlement. The pupils here, who are mostly South Sudanese, hope they will successfully complete the examinations and join secondary school. 17-year-old Gabriel Major says he fled his native Jonglei state when fighting broke out in December 2013. Together with his parents, the young man ran to the bush for safety, spending days without food. Gabriel says the family walked dozens of kilometers and eventually made their way to Uganda through Juba. Gabriel says he faces many challenges, including a lack of money to buy exercise books. He says sometimes he has to go an entire day without a meal. Despite those challenges, Gabriel spent time preparing for this week's final examinations. Gabriel says young people like him must get an education so they can participate in developing their country when peace returns.
I expect to be a teacher in future because I've seen teaching. To be a teacher is also a good thing. You acquire knowledge. So I expect to be a teacher in future. When we go back to our country, I will also bring them up like how I was brought up, and I teach them also.
Gabriel's classmate, 16-year-old Yar Susan Garang, says she's optimistic she and other refugee students here will pass the examinations despite their hardships.
Lack of books sometimes is a problem, but I've now handled it because when a friend has a book, you go and borrow from him because these guys here are all kind. So when you ask for a book, they give you and then you use it.
Susan says she wants to be a doctor. 16-year-old Deng Ayen and other people at the same school says he too is hopeful the refugees will succeed in their education.
That is what it is in our mind, because no one come to school to fail. So we come to pass. Also, people come to school so such that they can learn and become better people in future. I want to be an engineer.
Abuni Samuel teaches the South Sudanese. He says he sympathizes with the students and the challenges facing them.
Though they are candidates, they do sleep at least 3 or 4 in a room whereby they cannot revise properly. And it gives them difficulties. They may only have a time to read in a school here. And then we are teaching them in 2 classrooms where there are over 70 there. So class management has become very difficult. And then even to check their work, sometimes we may not be through with all of them because of their great numbers. So assessing them is also something which is difficult.
Samuel says there are 1,040 students at Nyumazi Primary School in Nyumazi Refugee Settlement. 80% of the population of pupils studying at the school are South Sudanese. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj, reporting from Nyumazi Refugee Settlement, Northern Uganda.
Wakuze ngubwira ko nazigera ngusiga ariko ndashaje reka nkwerurire bimubona bigutera urujijo wishidikanyiriya niyo shusho isi dutuyemo Abaseka bose siko bishimye mwana wanjye Oh yeah Gusa witinya Oh yeah witinya Shira umutima munda kuko nagize izo mpanuro Nizo zanjye z'uwondiwe
That is music from a young Rwandan artist, and he was introduced to me today by another young Rwandan reporter by the names of Ernest Ujiziwe Murindangabo. Ernest, thank you for introducing that song to us today. It's such a beautiful song. What's the name of the artist and what's the name of the song?
Yeah, the artist is called Andy Bumunu, and the song is called Ndashaje.
Ndashaje by Andy Bumunu. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. Welcome. Now, a new report shows that Uganda faces one of the world's largest and fastest growing refugee crises. This is mainly due to the influx of South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in their country. Over 1.5 million South Sudanese are seeking asylum in the region, but Uganda hosts a bulk of them. Figures are around 700,000 and more coming this year. A report from the organization Refugees International contends that while no emergency response is perfect, the Ugandan government and aid agencies in the region need to be given credit for receiving South Sudanese refugees in what they say is a dignified and protective manner. And in the studio with me, I have two authors of the report, Michael Boyce, whose particular focus is on peacekeeping and protection of civilians in situations of forced displacement, and Francisca Vigo Walsh, a senior advocate for women and girls. Both of them are with Refugees International. Welcome to you both.
You're here to talk to us about this new report that your organization has commissioned, just released this past week. What is the gist of the report?
How I would summarize the report is that on the one hand, we are facing just an enormous refugee crisis coming from South Sudan into Uganda right now. This is one of the fastest growing refugee crises that we have in the world today. Mm-hmm. 2,000, 4,000, 7,000 people sometimes fleeing every day into northern Uganda because of ongoing violence in Sudan, because of the economy, which is cratering, because of food, which is increasingly scarce. So on the one hand, we have a massive crisis which does demand that the world respond. But I think the second thing that's important to stress is that, contrary to so much of the bad news that we hear about refugees these days, contrary to the kind of hostility that we are hearing in so many areas against refugees, the lack of empathy with their plight, Uganda has done a really incredible job. It has shown incredible generosity in accepting these people, in giving them land where they can settle, where they can feel safe, in letting aid agencies come in and provide services, etc. So Uganda is really stands out at this point in time as an extraordinary, generous host of refugees, and a country that, you know, a lot of other countries in the world should try to emulate.
So Uganda has, I guess, progressive refugee policies, one of the few in that area, in that neighborhood. This report specifically talks about South Sudanese refugees coming into Uganda. Where else are they going? Because it's over 1.5 million refugees that have come in so far, and more. Uganda has only 700,000. You're projecting that they will have much more, later on during the year. But where are the other refugees? Which areas are they going to?
Well, I believe that we are seeing a flight of South Sudanese refugees to all neighboring countries, including Uganda, including the Democratic Republic of Congo, including Sudan and Kenya, also, and Ethiopia as well.
Yes, yeah, Ethiopia, and also a small, relatively small number of refugees, but some are coming into Central African Republic.
So the bulk of them are coming into Uganda, but others are filtering into these other countries. But Uganda has I guess welcomed them much better than the other countries. What are the other countries doing? How are they being received in the other countries?
It's a mixed bag in terms of how other countries are receiving them. On the one hand, you have Ethiopia, which is continuing to take in refugees from South Sudan, which is very important. You have Sudan, which is accepting refugees. In Sudan, the situation is a bit complicated because it is pretty difficult for humanitarians to actually access the refugees. Some of these refugees have gone into parts of Darfur and also parts of the South Kordofan area, and these are areas where
there's already
been
fighting.
Exactly.
Isn't it ironical that those two areas are actually receiving refugees from the south?
Well, not only that, but you also have refugees who are coming from those parts of areas into South Sudan.
Right.
So you have
people moving back and forth.
Yeah, which really speaks, I think, to how desperate the situation is in that particular part of the region. So Sudan is a bit difficult because of the limited access to those refugees. In Kenya, of course, we have been seeing notable hostility against refugees, certainly from Somalia, but also refugees from South Sudan may be affected because of the government's increasingly restrictive policies against refugees.
Now, Francisca, you were about to start mentioning talking about the other refugees from other areas like Burundi coming into Uganda. What is their situation
as
like?
Well as the Congolese,
As well as the Congolese, right? What is the difference between a refugee site and a refugee camp?
Well, refugee sites are really unique to Uganda, and it is attributed to Uganda's very progressive, as you mentioned earlier, an open-door policy for refugees, in which refugees are welcomed into the society, are welcome to access local services such as healthcare, such as education, and they're actually given the means by which they can engage engage in their own livelihoods, such as plots of land to cultivate. That is not something that you see elsewhere in refugee-receiving countries. Typically, what you see is a national policy of encampment, where up to hundreds of thousands of refugees are essentially cordoned off in one area, and they are thus very reliant on international assistance or assistance from the host government. They do not enjoy the freedom of movement that refugees do in Uganda, which limits their capacity to engage in livelihoods, to be able to tap into their natural resilience and live as a refugee that can self-sustain in that country.
If refugees are allowed to access other areas outside of the refugee camps or refugee sites, how does that help their situation in the long term?
Well, it helps their situation because in the vast majority of countries, if you have somebody that has fled their country for persecution, let's talk about a single head of household, a woman who has unfortunately seen her husband killed due to an ethnic issue, a persecution based on ethnicity. Once that woman is encamped in a refugee camp and she doesn't have access to be able to go and engage in the local markets, for example, or send her children to school, her children to access university, that actually renders her and her children more vulnerable to exploitation, more vulnerable to malnutrition and to other health issues. And that's just a few examples.
Now, do these countries that don't allow refugees to have that type of, I guess, freedom of movement and access and ability to engage in commerce outside of the confines of the refugee camp, is it deliberate? Usually, is it a government policy that says that as a refugee you're not supposed to do it? Is it an unspoken rule? Is it the community around them that is stopping them from making those type of movements?
In many countries, it's actually the result of an agreement that has been made between the United Nations Refugee Agency and the host government on where the refugees can be placed, on what lands they can be placed, and who is responsible for their protection and for their assistance. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it may actually be written in law, but it is more of a tradition or common law that has been followed over the past decades. We are increasingly trying to move away from that. You'll see that the United Nations Refugee Agency has been working with several governments to socialize them to what is called an alternatives to camp policy in order to help refugees integrate more. That is having varying degrees of success depending on the country.
And what I would just add to that is that Uganda is increasingly, and I think rightly, being looked at as a model for how to move beyond this very limited and one-dimensional idea of camps. And actually, in the last few years, we've seen representatives from other governments in the region, like Ethiopia, like Tanzania, coming to Uganda and asking questions, you know, about how well does this work? What does it mean for a local community to have refugees moving freely around, able to access employment or education? And I think that the preliminary results we're getting from Uganda are very positive in that respect. You know, I talked to a number of Ugandans who were living around these refugee sites, who were, you know, working maybe for a humanitarian agency or in a local government. And I asked them, you know, what does the arrival of the refugees mean for you? What do you think about it? And they said, you know, in the first place, so many of us have been refugees before, so we know what it's like.
That's the local community that you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Because of conflicts that there have been in parts of northern Uganda over the years, and Ugandans having to flee to the
South
Congo
Sudan,
or even...
Right.
Exactly. So
they have
the
a better
place,
understanding of what a refugee is, and I guess they're much more welcoming because they've been in that situation before.
Exactly. And so, yeah, empathy definitely counts for a lot in these situations. But what they also said, which was interesting to me, is that, you know, look, if we can bring these refugees into our economy, if we can get improvements for our local health clinic or our local school because the refugees are going to be coming into it, that benefits us too as Ugandans.
If you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, and in studio with me, I have two researchers from Refugees International, Michael Boyce and Francesca Vigo Walsh. We are talking about their latest report on the refugee crisis in South Sudan and the host countries where they are resettling. And of special interest is Uganda, which the report says has done and still does a great job in resettling refugees in a dignified manner.
What is the presence of refugees mean for them or their communities? Does that translate into more attention from the central government? Does it mean that the international agencies are coming in and helping the refugees and, in essence, helping the local communities? Why would a district want more refugees?
You said it all, Jackson, right
yeah.
there.
Mm. No, it's exactly what you said. And I remember speaking to one young woman who lived in Moyo District in northern Uganda, and refugees had just begun arriving in her district. There was a site that was just about to be set up, and I asked her, what does this mean for you? What do you think about the refugees coming here? And she said, you know, in many ways, it's very good because, you know, they have been expanding the road into town so that these humanitarian agencies can bring the supplies in, and that's good for us. The market is getting busier, so I have more of an opportunity to sell my goods. They've been talking about expanding the clinic, you know, which is very good for me. She said, you know, look, there are some small issues that we maybe need to work out with the refugees, but on the whole, I think that I will be better off in the future because these refugees are coming.
You were going to say something, but real quick, I wanted to ask about these communities that receive the refugees. There's often a feeling that most of them feel threatened by having refugees in their midst, and they feel like there are already strains on their land. Some of the host communities can be hostile to the refugees, but I'm getting a different impression that there are some communities that are actually more welcoming to refugees than the others.
Well, I think that speaks to also the important tone that a central government can set. Rather than fear-mongering that we see in other countries, in other contexts, a welcoming environment and recognition of these individuals as our brothers or sisters from across the border that are in a time of need and looking at how they can actually contribute to our economy. Of course, this is not the case in every state, in every host nation. There are places that have a much higher population density that would be under a significant strain, such as Burundi and Rwanda receiving refugees. Mm. But I think that also speaks to the central government's role in helping local communities understand that this is not a security threat for the local population.
And I would just add that, you know, while things may be somewhat positive in this part of Uganda right now with respect to refugees, we can't assume that this is just going to go on forever and that this generosity will be open-ended. You know, this provides a window of opportunity for countries like the United States, for European countries, for the World Bank and other organizations to actually show, to deliver for these communities the kinds of improvements that they want to see in their towns and villages. Because if that doesn't happen, and if expectations aren't met and promises aren't broken, for sure, we could see these Ugandan communities becoming less and less generous over time.
What are some of the lessons that are much more advanced countries, including the U.S., what some of the lessons that they could draw from this report? Many of these countries are starting to be inward-looking, closing borders, and some of the messaging, subliminal messaging, or even overt messaging, the fear-mongering with, you know, towards the issue of refugees and, you know, looking at them as a threat. What is it that these countries can learn from a country like Uganda, not a very rich country, but it has been much more welcoming to people in need?
I think there are two main lessons and one forewarning that we would like to deliver to countries like the United States or other European countries that may be considering a more closed border approach. One is the value and impact of a humanitarian dollar when it is applied correctly, when it is effectively used. In a situation like Uganda, where they have an open door policy and the host country or Uganda is actually very open and willing to work with humanitarian agencies and international donors, they have a close symbiotic relationship in which they can jointly coordinate and determine how to help the refugees coming. And that has produced fabulous results, in particular with regards to gender-based violence. We consistently see across the world serious problems in the humanitarian community being able to be ready to provide services for women and girls in particular that are in need as a result of acts of gender-based violence such as rape in the country from which they are fleeing. Right now, the situation in Uganda is that there are humanitarian agencies. While it is not a perfect response, they are ready and they have the humanitarian financing and backing and good policies from donor countries such as the United States to be able to deliver good programming, which results in more resilient refugees and more resilient families that can then contribute while their time in exile, if you will. So that speaks to the absolute critical importance of funding from donors and a good relationship with the host country. We're particularly worried about that right now in the context in which the United States finds itself, where we are hearing word, yet to be confirmed, that somewhat to the extent of 37% of humanitarian funds might be pulled. This is both a lesson learned in that we saw positive examples in Uganda and a forewarning that if we do not continue to fund and work closely with these host nations, we will not bear fruits in refugee responses. We will not have stable environments. I think the second thing to think about is, once again, this refugee influx is testament to the absolute critical need of an international engagement with and in coordination with regional governments and regional bodies in addressing conflict and promoting peace throughout these nations. This is not the time for the West, if you will, to withdraw their diplomatic engagement with these countries.
And one of the programs that has been successful is SEF from the Start. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And that is supported specifically by the U.S. government.
Yes, indeed, by two branches of the United States government, a refugee agency and also an Office for Foreign Disaster Assistance Agency. So the Safe from the Start initiative is actually born from what I was just explaining, that often, time and time again, we would see not enough humanitarian programming emphasis on how to reduce the risks for women and children, for women and girls that are fleeing areas where they have been exposed to acts of gender-based violence. And then because of both humanitarian agency failings and host government failings in terms of providing a protective environment, which is quite the contrary of what we're seeing in Uganda right now, women and girls or women and children falling into a vicious cycle of exploitation or vulnerability to other forms of gender-based violence. And so the Safe from the Start initiative is an initiative from just the tail end of the year 2013 that the United States government came up with to try and help both humanitarian agencies and host governments have a much more progressive way of looking at and integrating the humanitarian response for specifically women and girls that may have suffered gender-based violence. And it's been piloted, if you will, in a number of emergencies. And Uganda is one of these places where we are seeing real gains. And I believe that it must be noted, hats off to Uganda, that one of the reasons why it's going so well, that we are seeing programs ready and available to assist women and girls and to consider their needs in the humanitarian response, is precisely because of Uganda's open door policy, that they are working well with the humanitarian agencies.
Open door policy to the refugees or to the humanitarian agencies?
Both.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank
Michael Boyce and Francisca Vigo Walsh, researchers from Refugees International.
We would also like to thank all our listeners. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week. Goodbye.